This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you very much. My name is Brett Davis, and for those who don't know me, I'm the designer of the PinScore display products. A little bit about me. I own and operate Legacy Circuit Upgrades, an LLC focused on design engineering services. I've been with Hewlett-Packard for several years, and I'm a hardware engineer and architect for several of their test and development systems that they currently use for laser jet printer products. I've been in the business for about 15 years. I've got a lot of experience in circuit board design, manufacturing, schematics. I covered the entire gamut. I've been very busy over the last 15 years doing these kind of things. I have an MS in computer engineering and architecture, and I have a total of about 15, okay, this is blowing the horn here, total of 15 patents and trade secrets and defensive publications, you know, that have been awarded through Hewlett-Packard. Last but not least, I'm also a pinhead in hiding. I've been enjoying pinball for several years now. One of the things I want to make sure that I want to cover right up front is that I'm not here to talk about the benefits of surface mount versus through hole. I tend to design my boards, if you're familiar with the PinScore products, they are all surface mount products. That's my own preference. I know other designers use through-hole products, through-hole devices, nothing wrong with that. It's what we're comfortable with, and so I applaud them for what they've been doing for the pinball industry and replacement circuit boards. It's one of those things that, you know, they need to have done. So I'm not here to talk about that. I'm not here to talk about the competitor products. You know, they've got their way of doing things, I have my way of doing things. And also, or their competitor design decisions that have been made. You know, everybody has their preferences. So, having said that, you know, we'll go forward with what I've got. So why the re-engineering process? Well, if you think about it, these products, these boards that are in some of these pinball machines, if you take a look at the Bali Stearns and, you know, 1978, the early Williams System 3, we're talking 20, 30 years old, approaching that point now. Back then, the manufacturing processes were very different than they are now. The technology is very different. They only had through-hole devices. They didn't have surface mount technology. The start of FET technology and some of the advances in FETs really were just starting to creep in, you know, just infancy. So they weren't available. So you'd see a lot of the designs in pinball products using Darlington pair transistors, regular transistors, different logic families. So, I mean, things have changed. Also, the circuit. Oh, question.
I'd like to just give you a little background what you said about when they didn't have surface mount parts. All parts in conventional drilled circuit boards could be surface mounted if so desired. What drove the surface mount stuff is the automated robotic pick and place robots that
took
all the parts. That's what really drove the trend to the surface mount boards.
Well, thank you very much. I'm a young guy. When the solid state pinballs first came out, I hate to say I was still in elementary school. So it's still, you know, my vision of what's happened, what was available, is started really not until about the late 80s. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. New circuit design, you know, methodologies, components have become available now. You know, there are, you know, the switching, you know, like in power supplies, switching power supplies. They're now the latest thing as far as power supply design, and they're still making continuous advancements there. That's one area that definitely improves over the linear designs that were used in pinball machines. So, I mean, new methodologies came into being. New manufacturing processes also came about. Mentioned that, you know, the advancement of robotics and the ease of making pick-and-place systems available to place these surface mount components. Those were all key things. That made things more easier to assemble, less of a manual process. Not to say that there isn't a manual process involved in doing surface mount work, but you could do it a lot faster and a lot more efficiently. the opportunity to make it better was a big part of what should go into the process of re-engineering printed circuit boards for pinball machines. Take a look at it. How many of you have WPC games? Okay. How much heat comes off that driver board? A lot. Okay, there's new ways to, there's opportunities to possibly reduce that heat. You know, new designs are available to look at, to rethink the overall circuit design, maybe improve upon it, maybe add some additional testing features. You know, means to debug, make it easier to service, or even if you don't, make it so that you don't even have to service it. And those are things that drive me in the design of my circuit boards. And finally, of course, everybody here wants to see the pinball machines stay alive and running. We all enjoy playing our pinball machines. We want to see them running. We want to give them to our kids, let them learn a little bit about us. And let's face it, it's an art. Pinball machines are a work of art. My way of doing things as far as how I go about my design process. One, I'm selecting an original board that historically needs to be worked on. You know, we got your power supplies, you got your displays. You know, look at the Williams games, you got your MPUs and your driver boards. Those all historically have things that go wrong with them. I have a System 7 shuffle alley in my basement, and the driver board was bad in the shuffle alley. And it was a nightmare for me to figure out how to fix it. You know, because those diagnostics were not very good in a lot of cases. If it just didn't run, it didn't run. So you had to work with it a little bit more. And it's that kind of approach that I was going to take. We've all seen, if we have the original numerics and alphanumeric displays that were used in the 80s games, we all know what outgassing looks like. We all know what the burn-in on the glass looks like. It's a pain in the butt to change the glass. Can't find the chips, half the time now for the old plasma tube displays. It becomes next year impossible. So that is stuff, that's one of the guiding factors that got me first looking at the displays. Next step when I choose a design, I start talking to people, coming to the shows, asking the technicians that I've come in contact with, my local coin-op vendor, saying, What are the problems failing or causing the failures in those particular boards? The WPC is another prime, I'll use that, pick on that, because that one, that one's a challenge. The 5-volt section. I mean, I've heard stories of the traces getting so hot in the 5-volt section that they start popping off the board. The heat sinks get so hot on those on the GI circuit that they will start to discolor. The anodizations will start to discolor because it gets so hot. All these factors, wow, what can you do to solve that problem? And at the same time, how to make it so it's easier to fix, or even if you have to fix it at all. Correct those. And so that's when I ask myself how I can improve on the design to make the board more reliable, lower power, and bulletproof. Because these games all have 20, 30-year-old linear power supplies, and they are approaching the margin. The electrolytic caps are drying out. They all need to have work. Let's see what we can do to if they're not willing to change out a power supply and replace it with something that's off aftermarket, some of the newer designs, let's look at what we can do to kind of lighten the load a little bit. And then I start my research. I can't even begin to tell you how much time it takes to research out the trouble spots, the systems, the variations that occur. So, part of my research has come up with a simple rule. Rule number one, don't believe everything you read. How many of you looked at schematics in the manuals and found that they were incorrect? They didn't match their boards? Many times. It's one of those common things. Another thing that what has been one of the challenges for PinScore is that because we've wanted to make things as generic and usable across all the products, as many products as possible, the mountings. I have a stack of C8000 boards in my little work area There were four different revisions that I've come across for that board, and I have the two different hole sizes, but on top of that, some of them shifted the hole mount, the holes, as much as a quarter inch from the other, from another revision of the board. So that necessitated some adjustability. So you'll find that on most of my pin score boards, I actually have slotted holes to allow for a little bit of flexibility to move it back and forth, depending on where they were at. And we know this, that Williams was notorious for changing hardware. One part of it is that they were notorious for changing mounting hardware in the middle of production runs. So no two games, even though they may be the same game title, would ever really be, you know, sometimes would not be the same. So let's talk a little bit about looking at the displays, because that's my, where I've had my product line. You know, right up here you'll see there's this little snippet of the Williams schematic. For, you know, and they were consistent across all their generations pretty much of how they were handling their plasma tube displays, how they were driving them. You know, you have your 7180, you have your 6118, you have some buffers and some logic there. That's, you'll find that throughout all the games, very similar drive characteristics. And we all know about 6118s and all know about 7180s. They're in short supply and they're expensive if you can find them. So I was looking at that. So it's a really basic, simple circuit design that Methode needs for the plasma displays. No big deals. So as I was thinking about the displays, because the displays is the primary visual scoring mechanism in these early games. If the display had a problem, the player knew about it. They can see it, they can see the outgassing taking effect, they can see burn-in on the segments, they can see any number of problems with the displays, and nothing irritates me more, that's what I got into this for, than playing a game and my display wasn't working right. It was just driving me nuts, so I had to do something about it. Also, when I started this process, at the time, the current LED products that were out there, they were specifying that they were drawing 800 to 900 milliamps for the entire board. Now, on a 30-year board that only budgeted maybe about 350 milliamps for the entire 5 volts that were existing on those early display boards, you're really pushing the limit there, because you didn't know how much margin overall that they had built into their power supply. Also at the time, so maybe I was wrong, maybe I am picking on Pinlit a little bit, but one of the comments that I got from quite a few people is that their LEDs were too bright. They were burning them too hot. So they were really too bright. They didn't like that. And so started talking about it. Hey, let's adjust it down low. Make it adjustable. And then one of the other challenges that we faced is that how can we make sure that the person who purchases the board has confidence that when they put that board in, that it's going to work and it's not a problem inside further on in the game. So needed to add some kind of feature to allow us to make sure that that is happening. One of the things is that I'm a big FET fan. I love using FETs, but when I started looking at displays, I was thinking, gosh, transistors or FETs, how do we do it? Took a look at things happening around, started looking at transistor arrays. Most common family for transistor arrays in a package is the UOLN 2800 series. No problem looking at it. But as I said before, my primary design criteria is trying to get the power down. So looked at it, ran the numbers, came up with, you know, it's really just running too much. I didn't like the fact that I was going to be spending 20 to 30 milliamps just to turn on a single segment of an LED. And so I decided to go back to using my FETs. One, a FET takes microamps to turn on. Very small amount of current required. Second, your voltage as far as power, because the resistance across the drain to source, sorry for being getting technical, is in the milliohms. At 10 milliamps, you're still only going to get a tenth of a watt of power, you know, or very little power drop across there. So your parts aren't going to heat up. And since I was doing a custom LED, we have a manufacturer that we've gone with, worked with them. We chose a design center of 10 milliamps. We chose a design center of 10 milliamps to instead of the industry norm of about 20 milliamps, turning on an LED all the way on, driving, making it bright. So on top of that, so now I only needed 10 milliamps to drive my LED to get that maximum brightness. Yes.
Right, how do you pull that off? If the standard's 20 milliamps, I guess you just go back to the table and say, if we design this, we're going to make it 10 milliamps.
That's right. That's exactly it. I spent time on the phone with the application engineers and asked them what would be the impact if I said I wanted it at my brightness, if I wanted it at 10 milliamps instead of 20 milliamps. And at that time, at the current time, the technology allows for that. I'm not into the microelectronics. I'm not into that level of detail down at that silicon level. It's just that that's what I was asking for, and that's what we paid for. And when we did the custom tooling and got our LED displays, this is what they said. When they provided me the data sheet, this is what they indicated. The vendor, you know, they have confidence in their product. They gave me just an outrageous MBTF between failure on the LEDs in the segments. And so extremely happy with what they've done. And the proof is in what you see when you see our products. By the end result, after everything was said and done through the circuit design, I see about 30% savings over traditional 30% power reduction over the traditional LED circuit designs that I have seen, that I've worked with in my course, in my career with Hewlett-Packard and other board designs. Some people have asked me, it was very interesting, a conversation with another engineer last year here at the expo. He asked me about the brightness control. Why would people want something as silly as being able to turn down their LEDs? So it's silly, but it's a feature that didn't cost hardly anything to put in, simple enough to design, and it makes a difference. We see that people comment about it. They like a feature. It's one of those key things that differentiate from other products, is those extra features. And it doesn't cost hardly anything. So I'm always very much into adding features to my products. Yes, Rob.
How do you bring the brightness down in LED? Is that a big trade secret?
In a nutshell? traditionally, a lot of people would say that you go with a pulse width modulated signal. In other words, you pulse it to bring it down. But adding that kind of circuitry to the design is overkill. I mean, it just doesn't work. You know, I could have done it that way. Matter of fact, that was the original initial thought, to do a pulse width modulated signal. Just that when I started doing the circuit, it got to more than I wanted to address, wanted to put on there. I'm adjusting the current through the LEDs. That's how I'm getting my brightness control. And that's working. And we haven't had any problems with it. And it seems to be working just fine. That's one circuit that hasn't failed on me at all. And we haven't seen any issues with it. Now the debug button, as I mentioned before, you know, when you're creating a new product, a new circuit board, particularly for the pinball machine, which is inherently noisy, which has so many moving parts and so many interacting boards, the key to it is that I wanted to make sure that the customer, when they put their board in, this new display board, that they had confidence that their board was now working fine. How many have replaced glass or 7180 chips or the various transistor chips in their boards, and it turns out that there's still another problem with the display? How many have done that? I did that. I replaced the glass. Hate the 16-digit glasses. Don't like doing it. I replaced the glass, put it in, I still had missing segments. But everything else, the outgassing problems were gone. But I still had missing segments. What I have here is this little debug button, and I had to add the circuitry to do it, but it's been worth it. Is that when you push that button, all my segments come on. So I know that all the segments are working, I know all the drive transistors are working, and I also know that the communication is working through to turn the digits on. If I let that button go and during normal gameplay, I still am missing segments. As long as I know that's working, I can say with high confidence that the problem you're experiencing with missing segments or a missing digit, if it doesn't show up when the button's pressed, it's further on up in the game, most likely at the MPU. And so that gives you another means for debugging to solve a problem. So now once the design is done, what is my thing here? I test, test, test. PinScore is a project that's been in the making for 3 years. But we didn't release our first products until last year at Expo. So we tested the heck out of a lot of our systems. All my prototypes, when I've gotten done, I have a small test oven that I run, and I put the boards in a test mode that I create, and I run them at 70 degrees C for 24 hours. That's how I'm getting my power consumption units, running them at maximum brightness. That's how I'm doing it. Granted, I wish I could add some vibration into it, but, take what you can get. I also install the prototypes in as many games as I can find. Where I'm located at in Boise, Idaho, I've become friends with a lot of other pinball enthusiasts, and they say, sure, come on over, bring me a prototype, I'll put it in my games, let you run them for a while and see what happens. And so spending a month, 2 months there, if I can't find a local game, I start searching and finding others. Marco Specialties, database that they have, customer database, has been great as far as finding unusual games for people that say, sure, I'll be happy to take it and test it. Been great to do it that way. Very helpful. So at this time, I can actually say that we've sold over 1,000 units, individual game boards, game systems. I can confidently say that we've verified 70% of the titles that I list as being functional inside those games with no problems. Still, the other ones still are kind of creeping in slowly. But those are the lower production volume games, hard to find games, things of that nature. And so one of the other guiding philosophies is I don't let my customers find my problems. I try not to have the problems to begin with. That doesn't mean to say I'm perfect. If there's a problem with it, if there's a problem with your product or with the board in your game, I'm in there to find out. They call me, let me know, and I start burning up the phone line trying to understand what makes your game so unique. Sometimes it tends to be that it isn't the board display itself, but we find out that there's further problems up in their system that's kind of causing an unusual reaction with my board. And I try to resolve that. Production and support. Just as I was saying, when doing production, we run about 50 or more at a time of each board, so we have a constant stream. I'm constantly bringing out new production. I have a documented test procedure that my CM follows for every board. Every board gets tested. You look at the boards. If you have one, you'll see a label on the back, assembly in the U.S., and quality and QC tested and given a date code. So I can tell you exactly when we had tested that board and verified it. And that's important because you want to have, as customers and users, you want to know that the board's been tested and verified. You want to have that confidence. Nothing worse than pulling a board out of a bag, sticking it in there, and it doesn't work. That doesn't fly with me. If I can't do it right or do a good job, I don't want to do it. I know that I can do it, so I do it this way. I have responded to some of the darndest emails, some of the darndest phone calls while we're trying to work these problems out. There are some mysteries out there. No games are the same. I mean, one board works fine, the board works fine in this guy's high speed, but it doesn't work in this other guy's high speed. Why? Work it out, find out what the problem is. The variations that are out there are just unbelievable. I, as an engineer, never assume that my board is working in a game unless I put it in there. So that for those 30% that I don't know that out there, they have my undivided attention. If they come and say, have you ever tried in this game? I said, no, let's try it. Let's find out. I want to make sure. Also, being accessible is a key thing here. I know that email is only as good as the frequency as you look at it. I'm not sitting there checking my email 24 hours a day, but I do know that if my distributors call me up, I can say that I will respond via a phone call. If they can't figure it out, I will respond with a phone call within hours of that initial contact, just because that is important. Customer service in these circuit boards, these redesigned and re-engineered circuit boards, is important. Communication is important. Most of the time, it's just a few minutes and we've resolved the problem. Very rarely do I have to do multiple callbacks. It's just mostly just checking things out. So in summary, what's driving me in PinScore and the board development that I'm doing is that creativity. I love this stuff. I love playing the games. It is the drive. It is the passion. And as far as circuit design goes, my own personal opinion is that take the opportunity to be creative, to try new designs. Because if you basically adapt to existing designs, if they have problems, you're probably going to have problems down the line. So let's take advantage of what we have and move forward. If you're taking the time to do a design, improve on it. Add features. That's the key. What makes it easier? Nobody wants to work on their pinball boards. So let's make it as easy as possible for them to figure out what's going on with the games. If it means, for those of you who may want to design circuit boards, my counsel is, if it means adding a 5-cent LED to indicate, my voltage is present here, add it. It's worth it, because visually, it's a lot easier to open up that back box, look at the board and see the LEDs flashing, and see what's flashing, than it is to go out, grab your voltmeter, find two points to probe on, and see, determine what it is. See if that voltage is there or not. Visual is key there. It's also worth doing well. I mean, don't cut corners. Make sure you do the adequate testing. Make sure you put quality components in there. It may cost a few nickels and dimes more, may cost a dollar or so more, but it's worth it in the long run, because it'll save you on the calls, it'll save you on the time spent on the phone talking to people to help figure out what else is going on with your game. Next thing is research, research, research. I could not even begin to pound that into anybody who wants to do this. Putting it in one or two games and saying, oh, it's going to work in everything, just doesn't fly. Because no two games, regardless of even if they're in the same, if they're in the same family, System 11 games, or the Williams 3 through 6 games, or your Bali and Stearns, no two games are alike. They did multiple builds, multiple manufacturer runs for the original boards. Each one is going to have its own characteristics, own quirks. You have to be able to see those, recognize them for what they are, and adapt to them. So that is that's one of the key things, as well as never, never disregard the mechanical issues involved in putting the boards together and mounting them in the box. that's one of the things that, of all the issues in developing the boards, the mechanicals were the challenging because you don't, unless you have the game physically there, your mechanical issues as far as mountings, you won't know about them unless someone calls and goes and says, hey, this is it. That's how I found out about the Williams C8000 and the 8019 boards. That's the Williams System 3 through 6. We sent it out to a beta tester because I didn't have a big selection of Williams System 3 through 6 games. They called me up and said, the holes are too small. It's like, oh, well, what do you have there? That's how I found out. They had holes for an 832 instead of the 6s. So it's like, okay, well, let's enlarge them. Then another customer said, well, they're in the wrong spot. It's like, what? And he measured them out for me. It's like, wow, didn't know that. They can't be discounted. Mechanics are always an issue there as well. So that's what I have. This has been the Rob.
About going back to the available 5 volts, when you're talking about the Williams displays, they had a 5 volt line that was probably allowing 350 milliamps.
Right.
Because they didn't really need, all they needed to do was run monitors.
That's right.
And then the, what system, by the way, was that was running that 350? Were you talking to me in system 4 through 6/7 or
4 through 6/7? Yes.
Okay. So, and a competitor was around 800, 900 million. So how did you guys end up doing? Did you get down to close to?
We actually got down to our average power or average current requirement was down to about 600 milliamps. And this is in our system 11. We had a little bit more margin in the system 11 than we had in the earlier model games. But the system 11 actually has about a half an amp available to it from my research as far as how much margin they had. I got it to 600 milliamps as far as average usage during operation. And let me tell you, it's tough to get to that point. If it wasn't for some of the design decisions I made early on, I don't think I would have gotten there. As well as some of the circuit design issues as well. It's all part of the thing. You do the research, you do the time, you know, look into it. Now, an interesting thing, a lot of people, talking a little bit about power, Bali Sterns. Now, each Bali Stern game, would either have, some had 3, 6, or 7 digits, some would have more, 7 digits, 7 displays. $6 million man, key there. 6 players, so you had 7 displays. Now, when you take a look at that, they had only a single IC on there. Now, you look at the data sheet for that IC, you actually have it says the maximum, or typical usage was about 50 milliamps. 7 displays, 350 milliamps for that system. Now, the very original power supplies in those games, if you go back to those first games and look at their parts list and see the regulator and the part number they gave for that, go to the data sheet, you'll find that they were actually using a 2.5 amp regulator on those games. They opted to the 3 amp regulator in later builds, but you didn't have much there. Now, we have a $6 million man in our shop. It has a full set of pin score displays. My pin score displays for my $6 million man draw about 100 milliamps. No way I can get around it. It's just because of the nature. I mean, you can only go so far. But it has the original 2.5 amp version regulator on this power supply board. And it works fine. As far as measuring the temperature on that, can't really tell you that much. I don't have that kind of a thermocouple there. But I haven't had any problems there. But will I have problems in the future? I think I probably will. If I'm, right now it's burning in my shop right now, just sitting there, in track mode and just running. So, we'll see how long it takes. But that means there's an opportunity to improve on the power driver board, to increase that capability and move forward with that. Add some more additional features. I mean, there's a lot of talented, creative engineers who like pinball machines, who play them. It's an opportunity for continuing to grow and to make things happen. So I know I'm out of time. I thank you very much for coming and sitting in. I'm hanging out at the Marco booth. I'll be there most of the day. So if you have any questions, please feel free to come down and talk to me there. Thank you very much.